G'day, you're with Australia Talks here on ABC Radio National, Radio Australia and online at abc.net.au/RN. I'm Paul Barclay. More and more of you, it would seem, are turning to complementary and alternative health services to help with your various ailments. Last financial year, a record $3.5 billion was spent on various treatments to manage aches and pains, treat chronic illness, or just trying to stay well, maybe even fending off the ageing process. Why are so many of you opting for therapies like acupuncture, massage, meditation, homeopathy? The list goes on, often in conjunction with conventional medicine, I should add. And some of these therapies are unregulated. How do you know if the therapies are doing you any good, making you any better? Love to hear what you think. Call now, 1300 22 55 76 is the number. Always good to call in early. Also, post your views online on our comments page. Just search ABC Australia Talks and you can post your views there and I can read out some of your comments. But first of all tonight, let's hear from Angela Kidson, Senior Analyst with the industry research firm Ibis World. Hello, Angela.
Hi, Paul.
Angela, how much has the use of complementary and alternative health services increased over recent years?
This industry has been growing substantially in the last 3 years. In the last 5 years, it's grown by an average 3.6% and it's currently worth approximately $3.5 billion. This industry employs around 30,800 people.
Mm.
It's certainly people are increasingly looking to alternative health treatments.
It's a significant contributor to the economy then, by the sounds of it.
That's correct. As an alternative to conventional medicine, it is an area which people are turning to and looking for other options.
And so it's grown even since last year?
That's correct. It grew by, Ibis World predicts that it will grow by 4.2% this year and 3.5% last year.
Now, what do we know of the demographics of those using this variety of therapies?
Our research indicates that the market is, in terms of gender breakdown, 62% are women. That's one way of looking at it.
Mm.
Also, persons with higher levels of education and also higher levels of income are more likely to use alternative health treatments. Also, as people age, they're more likely to demand these treatments. And this is in common with conventional medicine as well, because as you get older, you do tend to require health services more.
And I suppose in terms of the high income users of these services, what's significant there is that most of these complementary health services are not covered by Medicare, some, in fact, not even covered by private health insurance. So often you do have to pay for it out of your own pocket.
That's correct. So disposable income is a factor here. However, insurance companies are increasingly covering alternative treatments, especially those such as naturopathy, acupuncture and remedial massage. So this is boosting the industry.
We hear a lot about how women look after their health more than men. Is this part of the explanation as to why 62% of the market is actually female?
We believe so. Women tend to be more proactive about managing their health, and the alternative health industry lends itself to sort of those looking for more holistic approach to their health. So this is one reason, certainly.
Mm. You're on Australia Talks talking about complementary or alternative therapies. What are you using? What's working for you, or maybe what's not? 1300 22 55 76 is the number. I'll take some calls soon. Give us a buzz right now. Much easier to get through if you ring earlier. Also, you can post your views on our website. Just search ABC Australia Talks. Robert has done so. He's posted many times over, I've found natural therapies to be very beneficial. Bowen therapy helped turn around a difficult problem with stiffing and tense muscles, which often caused spinal and alignment problems. The alternative was drug-focused and not the best option in the long term. Everything in balance, though. I needed a surgeon to deal with a ruptured appendix. And Donna has posted, maybe the fact these practices tend to be less invasive and aggressive and look at the body holistically and give you a full hour of treatment appeals to people. What do you think? Give us a call, 1300 22 55 76. Angela Kidson, do we know what the most popular of these alternative therapies are?
We've found that the most popular service is actually meditation. This is followed by acupuncture and vitamin and mineral therapy. So vitamin and mineral therapy, that's just the use of you know, these supplements, which many people would turn to. As well, we have hypnotherapy. So these are popular services.
Yeah, that's perhaps surprising, actually, that meditation would be number one on the list. And you're forecasting continued growth for this industry?
That's correct. The industry will benefit from increased regulation into the future. It'll help consumers gain assurance of the treatments that they're using. And we forecast that the industry will grow by approximately 6% per annum over the next 5 years. So that'll take it to $4.7 billion.
So you say it will benefit from increased regulation. I mean, what you're suggesting there is that people will become more trustworthy of an industry that has a degree of regulation. How can you be so sure that it's moving down the track of regulation?
There are signs that the industry is moving in this direction. The National Registration and Accreditation Scheme has included chiropractors and osteopaths from July of this year. So that regulates 10 health professions. Chinese medicine practitioners will join this list in 2012. And what we are seeing is more industry associations are requiring that their members be gain accreditation or undergo some training in order to be registered. So this will give consumers assurance of quality, and it will aid consumer acceptance of these less conventional treatments.
So the corollary of that is that the growth in complementary therapies has been held back by a lack of regulation, would you say?
Perhaps in some cases it has been held back. There will be some operators that there are low barriers to entry, so it's quite easy to set up a business in this industry, so that can erode trust. Regulation is one way that gives the industry increased credibility.
Yeah.
And also scientific proof, as there are more clinical studies that, you know, lend weight to the evidence for alternative health. This will also boost the industry.
We'll talk about that, in fact. Thanks for talking to us, Angela Kidson, senior analyst with the industry research firm Ibis World, which has found $3.5 billion spent last year on various complementary and alternative therapies. 1300 22 55 76 is the number to call with your thoughts. What are you using and what's working for you? Let's take our first call. David on the line from Adelaide. Hello, David. David, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Now, David, you're a naturopath from Adelaide, I understand.
That's correct, Paul, yes.
So tell us how your business has been faring lately.
Yeah, look, I'd have to say, you know, I first got involved in natural therapies back in the 1980s, and it's been quite interesting to watch the change that's occurred, firstly in the type of consumer or type of client that comes to see someone like myself. When I first started off in practice, the clients that came along were largely people who had tried conventional medicine for their health problem. It hadn't been successful, so they were coming to the natural therapist, the naturopath, as a last resort. About the 1990s, I started to observe that more and more people were coming along with less severe health conditions, with things like the common cold and flu. And then another trend that sort of appeared was that people were coming in without anything wrong with them at all, but there may have been a family history of asthma or heart disease or something like that, and they wanted to know what they could do to prevent themselves from getting that family condition.
Mm.
So it has changed quite significantly.
Is that a core part of your growth, that preventative health area?
It is. I think, you know, one of the reasons that people go to see a natural therapist is because they're not entirely happy with the type of service or the type of interaction that that they get through conventional medicine. They don't feel that they're given enough time with their general practitioner. They don't feel that the nature of the interaction is warm. They think it's a little bit cold and clinical. And more importantly, I think that people want to feel that they understand the nature of their health condition and they want to participate in getting better themselves. Mm. So it's not no longer just satisfactory for a lot of folk to get a prescription from the doctor, take that prescription or have surgery and then just go from there. They want to know more about it and they want to know what they can do to improve their lifestyle, the type of activity that they participate in, mm. And, of course, the type of diet that they consume.
Sure. Now, David, can anybody hang a shingle out the front of their office and call themselves a naturopath or is it regulated?
It's beginning to be more regulated, as Angela said earlier. You know, we're looking at
because that's a problem. I mean, there are obviously credible operators out there, but if you can just, you know, with no training at all and a bit of hocus pocus, just put a sign out the front saying that you're a naturopath and you're not subject to any regulation, there are potential problems there.
There are potential problems, I agree with you, and I think that's been one of the weaknesses in the profession in the past. Thankfully, it is changing, and now we have degree-level courses in complementary and alternative medicine or natural therapies. And as Angela said, we're looking at registration sort of 2012 and thereafter. Mm. So I think that's been a necessary thing. But, you know, the majority of practitioners these days need to have professional indemnity insurance. They need to be a member of a professional body. Most people have a degree-level qualification in naturopathy and acupuncture.
Okay, good to talk to you. David Stelfox, a naturopath from Adelaide, 1300 22 55 76. Soon you'll hear from Professor John Dwyer and Professor Alan Bensouson, taking a look at the research into this area and perhaps casting a sceptical eye over some complementary therapies. Let's go to Roy in Gingin, though, now, who's benefited from some complementary medicine. Roy, is that right?
Yes, that's right. At the age of 77, I cured myself of osteoporosis.
How did you do that?
I've been in medicine all my life, actually. I took up the Dr. Batch flower medicines way back 50 years ago. Spelled B-O-C-H, but he preferred his name to be pronounced Batch. And also I've been using the cell salts. But I find that the most important of all is holistic dentistry.
How do you know it's working, Roy? I mean, osteoporosis, reduction in bone density, lots of publicity about it.
When I had the osteoporosis, I crushed a vertebra in my back. Well, that laid me up for 6 weeks. I couldn't walk.
Mm.
But I managed to get over that, and I cured myself so well that I can now run.
Well, that's great to hear. Thanks, Roy, for your call. I can totally relate to your back condition. I was laid out earlier this year. And actually, I'll tell you what I found worked was Pilates, actually. Long term, but touch wood seems to be working. Greg in Brisbane is next. Hello, Greg.
Yes, good evening. Look, I'm going to be one of the sceptics, and my question would be to any natural therapist or traditional therapist, if their therapies are so good, why is it in the last 100 years Western medicine has doubled our life expectancy? You know, it's as simple as that.
Mm.
But, you know, statistically speaking, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. I'll leave it as a question, a rhetorical question perhaps, Greg, and someone can respond. I won't. David from New South Wales is next. Hello, David.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, David, you're a GP.
Look, I am. I'm a GP that works in northern New South Wales, the North Coast, which is an area rich in alternate therapies and people seeking alternate therapies.
Mm.
So I work cooperatively with patients and sometimes therapists, but my main concern is, and it's across the spectrum of most non-medical therapists, is the failure to separate the selling of therapeutic substances from the diagnosis. And for example, patient goes to see a naturopath for whatever reason diagnoses a particular problem and then will immediately steer the patient towards a product that they sell. They make money from the consultation and the product.
Mm.
Doctors aren't allowed to do it by law, and it does assist in a non-pecuniary interest in that diagnosis.
Mm.
And it's a very important distinction, and until, I think, regulators separate that, then you'll always have therapists who run a business looking to make a diagnosis which will support their therapies that they sell.
Because they've got a vested interest in doing so. Thanks for raising that, David. We will come to the issue of regulation a little later on. You're on Australia Talks. We're taking a look at the complementary or alternative medicine therapy sector Australia-wide. It's growing. Is this a good thing or not? Professor John Dwyer is Emeritus Professor of Medicine at the University of New South Wales and founder of the Australian Healthcare Reform Alliance. John Dwyer, why is the increase in the use of these therapies a concern, do you believe?
Well, look, it's a sad story in this most scientific of all ages when we are trying to swing our healthcare system around to prevention and keeping people well. Australians in a modern scientific country deserve to have an approach available to them that is evidence-based, that, yes, where science can document that, in fact, they're being helped, not ripped off. Because the amount of healthcare fraud in Australia is absolutely unbelievable. And there is we are very poor at protecting consumers. I chaired a committee for the New South Wales government on trying to find better ways of protecting consumers for healthcare fraud, which varies from the absolute nonsense that is foisted on Australians by, say, the vitamin manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
How often have we heard Ricky Ponting telling people this is the last thing, that vitamins will get rid of your stress and give you energy? We know perfectly well vitamins have no role to play in giving you energy or relieving stress unless you're one of the few people who is actually seriously lacking in vitamins, and even then it wouldn't relieve your stress.
Mm.
So we've got all of these companies capitalizing. I've heard many of these manufacturers of vitamins telling pharmacists, so let's capitalize on consumers looking for a way to...
So they're false claims.
They're false claims, scientifically proven false claims. People are trying to neutralize an unhealthy lifestyle by taking vitamins. There was often in Australia now we have this, vitamins are sold by someone from a vitamin company calling a shock jock at a radio station, and they pretend to have a conversation between equals, and the radio announcer is saying, yeah, that sounds right. And the vitamin pusher will say, look, if you're going out on New Year's Eve, take a few more vitamins before you go out because you probably have a few too many drinks tonight.
Well, the other aspect, of course, is that people think it's natural, it's herbal, it's safe. But some of these dosages of vitamins and herbal remedies, I understand, are not necessarily safe.
Well, that's absolutely right. We've had to reduce the amount of vitamin A that people take that was causing osteoporosis. We know that certain people who smoke, for example, can actually have an increased incidence of lung cancer if they take certain vitamin preparations. So that you've got, at that level, you've got a lot of consumers trying to do the right thing by themselves and their family and being told that these multivitamins are good for you. We've got all sorts of literature flooding into senior citizens' mailboxes telling them that they take glucosamine and chondroitin and their osteoarthritis is going to disappear. And you see on TV people in a wheelchair and the next minute they're playing golf, when the evidence is overwhelming that there's marginal, if any, effect from this. Through to the far more serious issue of people no matter how intelligent they are, become vulnerable when they have a serious disease for which they look like they're going to die, or have a very chronic complex disease which is hard to treat.
Mm.
They become very vulnerable. So someone says, look, there's a conspiracy. Those doctors don't want to cure you because they want to keep getting your money. But I know, you know, you've got multiple sclerosis, you buy this electronic mat, $1,500, you lie on it every night, and your multiple sclerosis will be gone.
You're skeptical, I can tell, John. My GP tells me that meditation has been proven to reduce stress and therefore have a positive impact on blood pressure lowering. We've just heard tonight that it's perhaps the most popular form of complementary medicine. I don't know what your views are on that, but are there any of these complementary therapies that do work in your view?
The meditation could work for certain individuals. Prayer works for some individuals. It's a similar sort of mechanism, I'm sure, stress relief through that. There's no doubt that there's numerous naturopaths out there that limit themselves to giving sensible advice. And then there are many, many others, unfortunately, because there's no regulation here, as we were talking about before, that give people terrible advice and rip them off by not letting them out of their room without giving them maybe $80 worth of stuff off the shelf. But, you know, there's a limited but definite role for acupuncture. There is clearly, we have learned a lot from Chinese medicine over the years, and scientific studies of the cocktails have allowed modern science to extract and purify chemicals that we can use more sensibly. If you think about all the years that foxglove was used as a plant to treat heart failure, and no one would rather take that than digoxin, which is the purified chemical which we can standardise, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm glad you mentioned acupuncture. We'll hear from an acupuncturist a little later on. You're on Australia Talks talking about complementary medicine. Mel has posted, how about a little critical thinking here? Well, I think, Mel, we're getting some of it now. Is anyone going to give consideration to some of the poor, unfortunate people who've died believing they'd be cured by alternative medicine? Helen, I have successfully used meditation to rid myself of migraines, suffered for 25 years. It's quite a discipline, but after all the drugs and discomfort I've had, it seems almost unbelievably simple, just 10 minutes morning and night. Let's bring into the discussion now Professor Alan Bensusan, Director of the University of Western Sydney's Centre for Complementary Medicine Research. Alan, is there any validity to the concerns expressed by Professor John Dwyer and others in the medical profession?
Hi, Paul. Look, I think John has raised a great point, and I think building evidence is critical to establishing sound practice in complementary medicine. And I don't know whether he was appeasing me or not, making comments about acupuncture and Chinese herbal medicine, which is my particular interest in research, but these are two examples of complementary medicine areas where we are building up quite a context of evidence. And I think that, you know, coming back to one of Angela's points right at the very beginning as well, we know that the users of complementary medicine are generally well-educated, and there is an increasing evidence base. So I think, you know, it's a little bit too simplistic to dismiss everyone as just being taken advantage of and that the evidence is so sparse. I think there is an increasing wealth of evidence. It is a matter of investing substantially more into this sector to tease out what's actually working and how it's working.
When you talk about there being an evidence base, people will be listening and they'll be thinking, okay, what form of therapies have been proven by proper peer-reviewed research to actually work? What would your response be?
Well, there are a number of places people can look. I mean, the Cochrane Collaboration, for example, is an international collaboration of researchers that review the clinical trials and evidence in particular health interventions. And there are reviews there, as well as outside the Cochrane Collaboration, that prove up a number of interventions. In fact, through the National Institute of Complementary Medicine, also hosted at University of Western Sydney, we've undertaken a number of cost-effectiveness reviews, so determining not only that an intervention is effective, but also potentially cost-effective.
Fish oil, actually, is one that my doctor has suggested is a good thing to take, lowering cholesterol and helping to alleviate heart disease. Is there good proof on that?
Absolutely, in terms of lowering triglycerides, yes, and in secondary prevention of coronary heart disease. So there are a number of areas where the evidence is strong. There's good meta-analyses, as John was pointing to, with regards to the treatment of migraines or chronic headaches and even low back pain. So I think we have to build the evidence up.
Yes, but to be fair, and I absolutely agree with the approach that you're taking and many others now. In fact, I've written a paper on called Good Medicine, Bad Medicine for the Medical Journal of Australia, making the point there should only be one criteria. Good medicine is good medicine. It's evidence-based. It's scientifically studied, etc. But, of course, there's lots of studies now showing absolutely conclusively what doesn't work. And in that category, you'd put homeopathy at this stage of the game. And there's so many other issues that have been scientifically studied that one can now dismiss those claims that have been previously made. So science, modern science, is the only way I can see that we'll ever get around this. And there's much to be learned, and the good things that we extract, terrific. As we prove things don't work, we have to inform people and, and try and move them away from that.
Okay, we'll take some calls, come back and we'll hear more from Professor John Dwyer and Professor Alan Bensusan as we discuss complementary medicine on Australia Talks. Let's go to Laurel, who's on the Victorian border. And what part of the border would that be, Laurel?
Oh, I'm over near Narracourt.
Good on you. So, yeah, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, you know, they talk about drugs. Vioxx had to kill about 60,000 people before they had to fight to try and get it off the market. And even then, the drug company didn't want to remove it. Okay, with pain relief, the herbal's okay. There's not a huge amount of them, but they can certainly lessen the symptoms. I've got severe rheumatoid arthritis, and I take grapeseed extract, and it works a treat for me.
Mm-hmm.
The chappie that's saying, oh, well, you know, the pharmaceutical drugs are proven, yeah, they are, because if they can patent something, they can take the vital ingredient out of it and patent it and make a lot of money, then they'll do the scientific research.
Mm.
But the drug companies won't research a natural product because they can't patent it, they can't make money.
Mm. And it's expensive, yeah, to do the research. Thanks, Laurel. I will move on. Sorry, we've got so many calls that have come through. I'm going to go to Mary in Canberra next, who had a car accident and found that some alternative medicine helped. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Paul. How are you going?
Good. What helped for you?
Look, I went to my GP because, you know, I was really getting a bit fed up with all the traditional methods that were being offered. You know, things like, mental blank here.
What drugs you're talking about?
Yeah, no, I refused drugs. I didn't want to take drugs because I'd heard that they were very bad for you,
mm-hmm,
you know, internally. So.
And what kind of injuries did you have, Mary?
Sorry?
What kind of injuries were you trying to treat?
I had soft tissue injuries and a cervical lumbar injury to the spine.
Yep.
So, yes, I've been seeing physiotherapists. They were the people.
Yep.
And nothing seemed to be working. So I was very lucky that I had a very open-minded GP. I went to see him one day and I said, look, it's just not working, all this, you know, treatment that we're investigating here. Is there something that I can do that incorporates movement in my everyday life? And he said, I think what you're talking about is the Feldenkrais method. We'll see if we can find one. And so we both looked and I rang the ANU and in the end I was very lucky. I located a practitioner in Canberra.
And what was the therapy?
It's called Feldenkrais. It's Feldenkrais. Method.
Mm.
And
it worked.
It worked.
Yeah. Look, I'll leave it there. Perhaps anyone who knows a bit more about it, it's a new one on me, can post it on our website, abc.net.au/rn/Australia Talks. Let's go to Sally in Melbourne. Hello, Sally. Sally,
yes, hello.
Hi there. Yes, you're on, Sally.
You all right? I was calling. It's an interesting topic, as always. I was particularly interested early in the piece that you crossed to involving skeptics, because I find that it's always an issue as soon as so-called natural medicines are brought up, the skeptics are brought in. Why don't we look at conventional medicine in terms of how is that working, as per the last call or one before? I think it's about 18,000 people die in Australian hospitals each year taking prescribed medications, and only a handful of people truly adversely suffer when taking vitamins and that sort of medication. So it's always an interesting situation.
I suppose part of the response to that, Sally, would be that for better or ill, conventional medicine is regulated, and those who make mistakes and where errors occur, there are repercussions. And I think part of the concern, and we'll talk a little more about this in a moment, is that some of the types of complementary therapies we've been speaking of are not regulated. One more call and we'll come back to our guests again. We'll go to Perth and say hello to John. Hi there, John.
Hello, Paul. Listen, a quick one on the problem that a lot of alternative medicine people tend to pour scorn on clinical trials. I just want to say a little bit about why we need evidence-based, well-designed trials, emphasis well-designed. There are three aims, at least, of doing trials. One is to define the population that you're going to apply the treatments to. This is not done in often very well. To estimate the variability, or in the statistical terms, the variance within that population, and to compare treatments. Now, so many anecdotal testimonial things are basically referring to populations of one and have no relevance to the population as a whole. Mm. The body itself actually heals itself and may take a long time, and complementaries often come in very late in the day, and attributing the cure to treatment is very fraught because most health problems resolve themselves without treatment.
Yeah, good point. Thanks, John. Alan Bensusan, we've heard some concerns there about proper clinical trials. But even where there is evidence to support a particular therapy, there must also be concerns about the enforcement of standards, given that I think chiropractors and osteopaths are about the only natural medicine practitioners so far to actually be registered by the government.
Yeah, that's right. The Australian health ministers have signed off, as we heard earlier, with introducing regulation of Chinese medicine practitioners in 2012. And that will certainly help ensure an appropriate standard of practice and education. I think it also helps the integration of care, the better integration of care. But look, ultimately, as we've heard from our callers, we do need a strong evidence base. We do need to build up high-quality clinical trials. The other aspect about regulation that we heard, aside from practitioners, is in fact the product regulation area. And complementary medicine products are regulated by our Australian Therapeutic Goods Administration, and they have a very strong scheme that's actually got an enormous cachet overseas. But it also needs to be strengthened. It also needs to create mechanisms that, for example, encourage further investment in research. One of the big deficiencies we've had in Australia is that we just don't invest in enough of this research. It's neither done centrally by government. There's no plan at all in Australia for what should be researched.
Why not? Why isn't the research done?
Well, I think partly that's a question that needs to be addressed directly to government. But I think there is an answer also with regards to, or potential answer with regards to industry, and that is that industry has not wanted to invest millions of dollars in research to date without some form of capacity to protect that investment. And if many of these herbal medicines are in the public domain, then there's limited patenting available.
Yes.
Now, that taking a leaf out of the page out of the book in China, you know the way they've done it there is they've encouraged companies to invest in research in Chinese herbal medicines, giving them some form of regulatory protection around the claims that they've proven up for a period of time, and that allows them to recoup their investment.
Mm.
Models like that have been adopted as well in Europe, and they need to be adopted here to
get
the sort of support that consumers need.
Mel has posted just on that, what evidence for alternative medicine are your speakers talking about? The US invested $2.5 billion through the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Exhaustively, they investigated alternative medicine and found nothing, says Mel. I'm going to bring into the discussion now a practitioner, Brisbane acupuncturist Stephen Jantz. Hello, Stephen.
G'day, Paul.
Stephen, you work at a practice that uses a range of complementary and alternative therapies. Are you seeing, apropos of our earlier speaker, more and more people coming through the doors?
We certainly do see more and more people coming through, coming back to the earlier caller, the naturopath, there's been a change in the nature of the why people come to us too.
Yes.
You know, there's probably three types of people. People who come to us because conventional care has been ineffective. People who come to us because conventional care doesn't have an option for them. For example, menopausal hot flushing in a woman who's not a candidate for hormone therapy.
Mm.
And people who philosophically want to help their body get well rather than treating sickness.
Mm.
And so there's the other trend that's happened in recent years is people are coming in a more acute situation earlier with their conditions. Rather than being chronic people at the end of the line, they're coming sooner with more acute conditions.
Yes, I mean, people go to see a doctor when they're sick and when they suspect as well that the doctor can cure the sickness. That's the other thing. So if you're feeling stressed and anxious and you have headaches, you might not necessarily go to a doctor because, well, what can they do apart from, tell you to take a Panadol and lie down. But are you getting, and this is what our earlier acupuncturist said, are you getting people coming along to see you when they're feeling stressed, when they're just trying to prevent the onset of more serious health conditions?
In my practice, although there's an element of that, the majority of people are seeking help with conditions they've currently got.
Mm. And okay, so those people are coming to see you. We've heard some concerns so far from John and from some callers about whether or not those therapies are actually effective. How do you address those concerns?
The best way to measure efficacy in an individual case is the patient, ask the patient, are they getting better? There are a number of assessment tools you can use, objective assessment tools you can also use if you wish to assess patients. There's the MyMOP questionnaire, which has been developed in the UK, which has been specifically designed to measure, does complementary medicine have effective outcomes? And this is what we have to focus on. Does this person improve? Do their symptoms improve? Are they getting better?
Do they believe that their condition has improved, or has it actually improved? I mean, you'd be familiar, obviously, with the placebo effect. We can give people a sugar tablet and they can believe that that tablet has cured them.
Well, I must pull you up there. That's not the placebo effect. That's smoke and mirrors. The placebo effect is you give a person a sugar tablet and they get better. This has been investigated thoroughly in the area of pain medicine, which is the field of anaesthetists. Using positron emission tomography and functional MRI scanning, they show that when you give a person a placebo, the same areas in the brain light up as when you give them the actual drug. And indeed, with analgesia, you can reverse that by giving them naloxone, which cancels out morphine. Placebo isn't thinking you're better, it's actually getting better.
Mm. Is that the case, John Dwyer?
Well, it's not quite as simple as that, because a lot of people get a placebo effect that doesn't last because you haven't cured anything. Mm. And they are so anxious that this will work that they have for 24, 48 hours, even longer, they may have a beneficial effect. Beyond that, the placebo effect can be more long-lasting. But the truth of it is that the path to scientific hell is paved with anecdotes about individuals. As Alan was saying, we need properly designed clinical trials. Fortunately, we're doing more and more of them, and they do show that some things are worthy of further investigation. And it's important that clinical scientists pick, because we can't study everything, but we pick and prioritise what particular things that we are looking at. And if you look at traditional Chinese medicine, for example, and the potential for anti-hepatitis drugs, for example, that's an area that's well worth studying.
Mm.
But look, I would emphasise that, you can't have regulation of an industry or of a discipline, so-called, which is so often not discipline, without agreeing on what the body of knowledge is that practitioners have got to demonstrate capacity
That's true. But if I have a headache and I go to see Stephen and he gives me acupuncture and my headache goes forever, why should I care? It's dealt with the problem that I've gone to see him for. I mean, if some research proves that, well, it shouldn't actually be dealing with your headache, why should people be concerned about that?
Because you, and as other people have, some of the callers have rightly said, often the methodology that is used is fortuitous in the sense that you were going to get better and your headaches, your stress was gone, your kids are back on the road, et cetera, et cetera.
It's coincidental.
Unless you do proper scientific studies with enough people and enough double-blind components built into it, you're not going to get the answers.
Stephen,
good scientists are studying at the moment.
Stephen, I'd just like to pull you up there. Double-blind is excellent for studying drugs. It was introduced individually by a psychiatrist to study drug therapy. It's excellent where neither the patient or the practitioner knows who's getting what treatment. This is one of the difficulties in getting sufficient adequate evidence, because this model is simply not very suitable for a range of interventions. And in natural medicine in particular, we pride ourselves not on treating a single condition in isolation in a controlled environment. We're treating a real person with multiple conditions. So double-blind methodology often isn't the best method to investigate some of the things we do.
Then how do we prove it's working?
There are a range of different methods you can use, and Alan would be a better person to explain the different methodologies you can use to investigate natural medicines and find out that they do work.
Okay, well,
quickly, we can measure efficacy outcomes very easily. That's different understanding mechanisms. There's different issues at work here.
Okay, Alan Bersusson, how do we determine whether or not these various therapies are working? Do you agree with what Stephen Jantz was saying there, that sometimes the double-blind trial process that's used for conventional medicine isn't the most effective?
Oh, it's virtually impossible to apply a double-blind study to an intervention that's very interactive, such as acupuncture or physiotherapy, nursing care, And in some cases, it's not very ethical if you look at surgery, trying to apply a double-blind study to surgery. So there's lots of areas. We need to be very clear here, Paul. It's not just complementary medicine, which has a huge spectrum of interventions. It's also conventional medicine that are not tested and evaluated under double-blind trials because it's not appropriate. So there are all sorts of other designs that we use, you know, case control, cohort studies, epidemiological studies, etc. But the idea is that we ultimately build up the best evidence we can around each individual intervention, and we operate in an environment where we draw on that best evidence, and that is always a moving feast. I think John intimated that you know, there will be some interventions, complementary as well as conventional, that once tested don't prove to be effective, and they need to gradually fade away into the background.
What's the most under-researched area of complementary medicine, in your opinion?
Well, look, I'd have to say that as I said a while ago, there are no research priorities in this area in Australia, unfortunately. There's been insufficient investment in that. We're trying to do that through the National Institute of Complementary Medicine. But having said that, the industry that produce products have a greater investment in, greater chance of return by investing in research, and they will do it. But interventions that aren't, you know, don't benefit an individual corporation, such as acupuncture or Feldenkrais we heard earlier, or meditation, you know, that you can't, bottle and slap a label on, they're the ones that are going to suffer big time in the next 10 years, because we really need to identify if they are priorities and invest in them appropriately.
Okay, Ellen.
Paul, can I just must emphasise that also that you've got to look at this fraud issue and the lack of protection for people. Just to give you a classic example, in recent times we've had people advertising all over Australia they could cure your allergies, including peanut allergies, which is one of the most dangerous forms of allergic reactions, I think most of your listeners will know, through acupressure. Let's forget the needles. Let's just push on various parts of your body. And the council set up by the TGA to pre-check advertising for complementary things, let this thing go through. Mm. And so all over newspapers all over Australia were advertising this. It's actually started here in Queensland, I'm embarrassed to say, sitting here with you today. But we've got lots of weird things that come out of Queensland in this area. And we got them closed down. I mean, you know, there was a flood of complaints about how dangerous it was. But we're always chasing our tail to try and protect the consumer after someone advertises they can cure your impotence when they can't.
Well, there's a well-publicised case at the moment, obviously, on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald just today, which we won't be talking about, so don't ring, about vaccines. I'm going to let you go, Alan. I've got to take some calls, and that'll just about take us through. Professor Alan Bensusan, Director of the University of Western Sydney's Centre for Complementary Medicine Research. Al has posted, "I don't understand what conventional medicine is afraid of. They obviously don't have all the answers either." Let's go to Jules in Yarraville. Hello, Jules.
Hi, thank you for all this. I've try and make this quick. I've been depressed for a lot of my life. I have post-trauma, I have anxiety. I've worked for 39 years and paid tax. And when I left work, I was really quite a mess at 55. And I now 64. After 2 years of being on my own money, I went on to disability pension for 4 years. What I do is I forget to do things. I forget to tidy up. I forget to do things. I can still live, and I get outside my home life. I can run my life fairly normal. But it's called facing your own anxieties.
Yes.
And so I got on the pension. I forget to put it back again, of course, you know, to renew it. So I tried to get it back again, and they changed the wording, and I had to put, and I'd been going, I've been on and off getting psychiatrists and counselling and stuff. I found it very helpful.
And you're using medication as well or not?
No, I did. When I was in my early 20s, I took Valium for a while. Mm. They popped you the pill and Valium in those days. So I took it for a while, but I didn't take it constantly, just when I started getting down.
But you find the meditation works.
I found meditation was excellent. But what was excellent, it helped me learn to settle myself down.
Okay.
It helped me learn to also to move To get clarity.
I'm glad it worked, Jules. I'm going to have to leave it, though. Let's go to Doe in, don't want to be rude, but I'm pressed for time. Doe in Kyneton, who's got a personal story to tell us. Briefly, I hope, Doe. Doug.
Thank you, Paul. It's Doug.
Doug, we got that clear.
Kyneton, and thank you very much for taking the call. I just wanted to...
People do have very unusual names on this program, which is why I said that. But go ahead,
yes,
Doug.
And I just wanted to mention to you that I've had a successful outcome with the treatment of schizophrenia, which I was diagnosed in 1972, 73. In 83, I decided to go off the psychiatric medicines because of the side effects that I was suffering from those psychiatric medications. And I therefore took a holistic approach. I eliminated particular foods, I challenged particular foods, therefore I altered my diet. With that, I also took supplementary nutrients, which I still take. I minimized as much as I could my exposure to toxic chemicals, a bit difficult. I have a lot to commend the complementary and alternative treatments, and I made a submission to the Senate Select Committee on mental health in the federal parliament, and if anyone is interested, particularly Professor Dwyer, he'll find a record of my case study at submission 317.
Why don't you, Doug? We are almost out of time. Perhaps you could even post a link to that if it's possible on our website, because I'm going to have to wind it up just there. And Doe, I think I'm the one in need of some medication at the moment. Let me come back to our two guests to wrap up, John Dwyer and Stephen Jantz. John, one concern I think you have is when patients mix conventional medicine with complementary medicine, and you think that could have some worrying results?
It does have worrying results, and the first message, if listeners go away just remembering that they must tell their doctors that what they're taking in the way of complementary medicine, because these are drugs, these are powerful, they can have lots of interactions. And even patients who might be on anti-HIV medication can be taking complementary things which would neutralize that. So that's a crucial issue. The other issue is protecting people from people making outrageous claims, charging people, and actually putting them at danger. So that there's just the money business of people wasting their money on vitamins that goes straight down the toilet. But there's also the business of people being robbed before they die, where people actually, we've had naturopaths in court for manslaughter because they denied people effective treatment and treated them in the basement of their house.
That's just straight up fraud.
Fraud. But there's a lot of that. And the TGA and the government have got a lot to answer for in that they are not doing enough to protect consumers.
Okay. Just to wrap up, Stephen Jantz, perhaps you'd like to respond to those concerns in particular, the fact that, you know, John's worried about that people come to see complementary therapists, go to doctors as well, without perhaps knowing the potential pitfalls?
I think that's a big issue, and one of the major reasons is many patients are reluctant to discuss with their doctor that they're seeing another practitioner for fear of being put down and belittled. This is one of the major barriers. I have to encourage my patients to tell their doctor that they're taking treatment because they don't want to be humiliated. They don't want to be put down. They want to be respected for their choices in their healthcare and work with their doctor. It's not always possible.
Okay, I think we're going to have to wrap it there. It's been a great discussion. Thanks to Professor John Dwyer, Emeritus Professor of Medicine at the University of New South Wales and founder of the Australian Healthcare Reform Alliance. Thanks also very much to Brisbane acupuncturist Stephen Jantz. Earlier on, you heard from Professor Alan Bensusan from the University of Western Australia and Angela Kidson from IBIS World with some of those statistics about how we're seeing continued growth in alternative or complementary therapies. Keep the debate going on our website. It's very active, our online opinion page. Just search ABC Australia Talks and you can contribute your thoughts to it. You can also download any recent Australia Talks programs on your pod and find some additional information on today's discussion. I'm back with you with another Australia Talks tomorrow. As you'll know, the internet has become fertile ground for forming new relationships. One in four Australians now find their partner online. How has the web changed the way we relate to others and helped us meet new friends and lovers? That's on Australia Talks tomorrow. Stick around on Radio National for Late Night Live. After 10, Philip Adams talks to Bruce Shapiro about the latest goings-on in the United States. I'm Paul Barclay. I'll speak to you tomorrow.
we really have prosperity without growth? Can we change our economic system to prevent biodiversity loss, resource depletion, and species extinction?
At this level of economic activity, already we are outside planetary boundaries.
UK Sustainability Commissioner Tim Jackson argues that we must rethink the very notion of growth and what it means to be genuinely prosperous. Make sure you don't miss this topical Big Ideas. Have a listen at the ABC Radio National website.